program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us on this chilly final Saturday in January. Pleased to have Tom Scheuer in studio, host of the program. Thanks to our studio coordinator, Craig Shrupford, today. And Tom, a very special guest and a great topic, a very timely topic today.
Absolutely right, Steve. We are really blessed here today to have with us Dave Singer, who is the chair of the board of Moss and Barnett. Dave is going to be addressing, I might say, a bit of an unusual topic in that we'll be talking more about what he does as a lawyer, a very particular kind of lawyer, as opposed to a particular legal subject matter. But we thought it would be interesting to do because basically so few people have any real idea of what a business lawyer does, and that is what Dave Singer is all about. He's a business lawyer, a business succession planning lawyer, an estate planning lawyer, brings it all together under that sort of that general umbrella. And so we're really pleased to be able to share that information with our listeners here today. I would say further that Steve is a highly regarded lawyer. He is recognized by his peers in the bar as a super lawyer, rated by Minnesota Law and Politics, which is limited to only 6% of the lawyers practicing in Minnesota. So that's quite an accomplishment. Dave, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you for your kind words. It's nice to be here today.
You know, Steve, as we're sitting here with Dave, I would say many people, I think, or at least some people, have in mind a business lawyer as somebody who looks a little bit like the, you know, the clerk Bob Cratchit in the Dickens Christmas Carol, sitting on a large stool with a quill pen all day long and a mound of documents. But as you can see from this strapping lad here in front of us, who looks as vital and strong as he did when he was lifting hay bales at his father's farm in North Dakota, that's not true at all. And so we're going to explore Dave's background a little bit here, too. You did start out in North Dakota, Dave, I know, back in the day.
Yeah, that is true. I hauled bales for 18 years.
And so, Steve, really quite a remarkable story as Dave and his bride, Karen, came down to the Twin Cities not too long after he graduated law school and really didn't know anybody down here and now has become really one of the deans of the business law practice area in the Twin Cities in the upper Midwest, one of the more successful practitioners, and as I mentioned, chairs Moss and Barnett's board of directors. And so, Dave, I know that these background traits that you bring have been important in your success.
Well, growing up on a farm did teach me a lot of good qualities. I was very fortunate to have parents that taught me hard work, taught me how to get along with people, and a lot of the character traits that are really important to be a good business lawyer.
Well, and we'll be talking a bit more about that as we move through the program, but also I thought it'd be worthwhile to point out for perhaps, you know, young people thinking about going into law, too, that Dave brings an interesting background in other respects to the practice of business law. Number one, Dave, you went to the University of North Dakota and earned a degree in accounting where you qualified for the Certified Public Accounting Examination. And I know you were never licensed as a CPA, but you are qualified to be a CPA.
I started out in accounting only by happenstance because, quite frankly, it seemed to be the easiest thing to follow in the catalog at the University of North Dakota. Turned out to be a great background for what I do today.
Now, Dave, why did you want to get into the law? When did you decide, I want to be a lawyer?
That's a good question. I actually didn't even think about going to law school until halfway through my fourth year in accounting.
Oh.
When I decided I didn't want to be an accountant, and at that time I happened to be building pole barns for farmers, and I was making more money building pole barns during the summer than the starting salary was at then Big Eight accounting firms. So I thought, well, I love going to school. I'm doing okay with the money part of it. I'll just try something different, and I just picked law school.
Those pole barn nails are long, too, aren't they?
They're 6.5 inches.
That's a lot of hammering.
Yes, it is.
And I know that experience, too, Dave, taught you how to run a business as you ran it successfully for your 4 years of undergrad and 3 years of law school to put yourself through both undergraduate and then postgraduate education.
It was a great learning experience, starting at 18 years old, hiring people, doing the payroll, figuring out how to make expenses or pay expenses, how much to pay people. It was a great experience.
And Dave, I'm sure your background growing up on a farm, building pole barns, the accounting, has all served you very well in your career now as a business attorney, especially in this neck of the woods.
It has. It has allowed me really to relate to business owners. For some reason, around here, people still equate growing up on a farm, I think, with hard work and trust, being trustworthy. And it's really allowed me to connect with clients. I do a lot of work with out-state clients and a lot in the agricultural industry, and it served me well.
Well, indeed it has. And so, Steve, we do have to interrupt our programming a bit here today because we have a special alert that we want to convey to our listeners here today about the impact of this, really this quite amazing situation that we have regarding the failure of Congress, I guess I'll put it that way, or inability of Congress to address the change in the estate tax law this year. And Dave, this is a very rare occurrence for us to make an alert notice like this to folks, but it's very important.
Well, we're facing something in this country that we haven't seen since 1916, and that is we currently do not have a federal estate tax in our country. Now, it might be short-lived, but that is the situation today. We got there in somewhat of an unusual way. If we go back to 2001, at that time, the federal estate tax had a top rate of 55% and a $1 million exemption. The exemption is the amount of assets that someone can leave to their heirs without estate tax. Congress passed a major tax law in 2001 that provided for, over a period of time, that maximum rate of 55% would make its way down to 45% by 2009. And the $1 million exemption would steadily increase until it reached $3.5 million in 2009. Now, that same law also had an unusual provision in it, and that is that when we got to 2010, the estate tax went away completely. And I emphasize that it's the federal estate tax because we still do have a Minnesota estate tax, as do several other states. So the significance of all that is that we now find ourselves in a position where many people need to review their estate plans because much of the terminology in the plans is tied to federal estate tax. And when we don't have the tax, it's unclear as to how the assets will be disposed of upon a death. The other quirky part of this whole tax law that was passed in 2001 is that when we get to 2011, we once again have the federal estate tax back at the 55% rate and back at the $1 million exemption.
And so, Dave, are people going to be, are you asking people or warning people to take some action here now in the face of this? Is this creating problems for estate plans that have been in effect for quite some time or even that have been recently enacted? I would only imagine that, especially with Congress talking about passing remedial legislation and making it retroactive, that this is going to be a real kettle of fish here.
It is somewhat of a chaotic situation. It is critical that people contact their estate planning lawyers to determine what action, if any, should be taken to address the potential death in 2010. Because many estate plans over the years have been tied to the federal estate tax, and planning was done that way in order to reduce the need to change estate plan documents every time a law changed. But since the documents are tied to the terminology in the tax law, and since we currently do not have a federal estate tax, it is unclear as to how the assets would be distributed upon a death.
Dave, is there any sense that Congress will take action soon on this matter?
We hear different things out of Congress. There are certainly leaders in Congress that have promised action in the early part of 2010, but so far we don't have anything. Quite frankly, most of us in the business had never thought in any stretch of our imagination that we'd ever get to 2010 and have the federal estate tax go away. So it is very unpredictable what's going to happen in 2010.
Is there any opinion on what would be the proper course if you could advise Congress on what they should do? What should be done?
Well, first of all, something should be done so that we have clarity.
Okay.
as to what should be done, of course, is where you end up on the political spectrum.
Sure.
But it doesn't serve anybody's best interest to have all this uncertainty.
All right, we're going to take a break. Great program today. Dave Sanger joining us in studio. The topic on the program, what's wrong with being right? And the day in the life of a business law attorney, Tom Scheuer, the host on the program, of course. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett here on News Radio, 830-WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
The truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
I'm so busy. Can't I get out of jury duty? Did you know prospective jurors in Minnesota are selected from the rolls of registered voters? Failure to respond to a summons to jury duty can result in a bench warrant being issued for your arrest.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Tom Scheuer, our host, Dave Sanger in studio today on the topic of what's wrong with being right and a day in the life of a business law attorney. Phone number is on the program as always, 651-989-9226 or toll free 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well as always at 81807. That's 81807. Powered by Wellington Window and Door.
Steve, just coming off the break now, we wanted to reaffirm that the lapse of the estate tax at the federal level in 2010 is occasioning Moss and Barnett and other law firms as well to advise their estate planning clients on the need to really to check in with their attorneys and to kick the tires on their estate plan to make sure that they have everything the way they need it. I suppose, that though, unless they know for sure that they're not going to expire this year.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so some people may have some time, but in any event, safe is better than sorry. And we're not talking about expensive fixes here, are we, Dave?
No, the fix actually for most people, if there is a fix required, is going to be relatively simple and relatively inexpensive.
And so this dialogue about estate planning has demonstrated, I think, Steve, the breadth of Dave's practice. He is one of the top estate planning attorneys here in the upper Midwest, as I think that discussion we've just had demonstrates. But we also wanted to talk a little bit more broadly about what it means to be a business attorney. And so, Dave, I know that I often wonder what you do all day.
Well, I think my wife wonders the same thing at times. Well, let me say, first of all, what I do has no resemblance to what you might see on TV as far as what lawyers do in those lawyer programs. I get that question a lot. Well, Dave, what do you really do? And frankly, over the years, I've had somewhat difficult time explaining exactly what I do. I can say, well, I'm a business lawyer. I do estate planning. I do succession planning. I do those kind of technical things. But really what I've discovered is I do four things. I listen, I counsel, I mediate, and I persuade. And, of course, I do those four things in the context of lots of different projects, but those are the four things that really control what I do.
Let's break those down a little bit, Dave. I know that you subscribe and faithfully to following those four items in your practice, and particularly I know from my years of working with you, you really stress the importance of listening to clients as a business lawyer. What do you mean by that, and why is that so important?
Well, in one sense, of course, it seems quite obvious that we need to listen because we all need to listen. But listening really is the foundation for everything that comes out of a project. And I mean listen intentionally. We listen kind of just subconsciously in a lot of ways, but I need to listen to my clients and hear them objectively and not filtered through my own biases. For example, a lot of times when we're doing estate planning, I know the best way for clients to deal with the estate tax situation, but that may not at all be what makes them comfortable. I always tell my clients, don't ever do anything, even if it makes the best tax or legal sense, if you're going to toss and turn at night because you don't feel right about what you did.
And I know that when you're listening, you're an active listener, but you don't take notes typically.
I have a hard time really listening if I cannot look people in the eye. And the notes oftentimes is distracting. For example, the other day, a business owner came to my office and said, well, I'm ready to turn over the reins of my business to my oldest child. Well, that can mean a lot of different things. That can mean I'm just going to make my child president, yet I'm still going to make all the decisions and control what happens. Or it can mean I'm actually going to take off for Florida and never set foot in the place again. So it's critical that I ask a lot of questions to understand what that person really means. Also, when someone says something like that, it could arise out of a whole host of different things. Perhaps one of his other advisors, maybe his CPA, said, you know, it's time to turn over the reins. It might be that he just came from a doctor's office where the doctor told this person there's a terminal illness. It might be that maybe the oldest child who wants to have the reins is putting pressure on this person. So we really need to drill down and find out what's motivating the decision.
Dave, is it a big key to learn about that business and what goes into it? Say it's a field that maybe you're not initially familiar with on the outside. Do you do some homework to find out what goes into running a widget factory, for instance?
Yeah, the more information I have, the better. And so it is important to do some homework. Fortunately now with our internet, there's so much information on the website that really helps educate a business lawyer. A business lawyer really does need to understand the business.
Dave, we're just a minute or so away from the break, so let's just talk briefly and get started on what you mean when you say that you, as a business lawyer, counsel clients. That seems to be obvious, but very quickly, what does that entail?
Well, when I go to a doctor, and the doctor tells me what is going on in my body and that gives me some different solutions, I really want the doctor to tell me what to do. And I think our clients really expect their business lawyer to tell them what to do. Obviously, the client makes all the decisions, but client is expecting to get the benefit of our experience in really making the suggestion on what to do.
All right, we have much more on the way. Dave Sanger joining us in studio. Tom Schroyer, the host. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. We have a whole lot more on this program coming up. We have a brief break for the news and weather. Once again, it's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us. It is Minnesota Law on a chilly Saturday here at the end of January. Phone number on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at 81807. That's powered by Wellington Window and Door Company. Tom Schroyer is our host. Dave Sanger is our guest in studio today. Day in the life of a business law attorney, and also on the program today, what's wrong with being right? And we're going to delve into that next, Tom.
We are, Steve, because we've talked generally about what a business lawyer does, listens, counsels, mediates, and persuades. And Dave, I want to drill down on and focus on the mediation aspect. And in that connection, talk about your article that was published, which is called What's Wrong with Being Right, a provocative article that our listener, Steve, can pick up very easily on our website. We have it posted there prominently. This article was published about a year ago. Dave, what inspired you to write it?
Well, over the years, I've watched so much planning and consternation and difficulty because people feel the need to be right. So much planning ends up being stopped because people are insisting on their own way. Steve and I were just talking in the break here about how something as innocent as a couple of kids having a little spat at a Thanksgiving dinner might end up getting into the family business because of the parents siding with their kids. So the idea here is that we need to be concerned about making sure that we aren't just insisting on our own way, cutting off our nose to spite our face.
But Dave, isn't it the lawyer's job, especially a business counselor, to get the clients everything they want, make sure that they have it exactly the way they want it always?
Well, it is our job to help a client accomplish their objectives. And sometimes that means telling clients things that they may not want to hear, counseling them against taking certain actions that really are inconsistent with helping them accomplish their objectives.
I know that you draw upon in the article your personal experience with some litigation, and share with us, if you would, please, Dave, how that affects the judgment you bring and the wisdom you bring to really these situations that, as Steve is alluding to, can really arise out of the smallest little slights, but yet come with a very high cost.
Well, going through that myself was the best tuition I ever paid. We did have a small business, two other lawyers and myself, and we had a dispute with our key employee. We knew we were right, and so we thought we were going to stand on our principle, and by standing on the principle, it ended up costing us a huge amount of money. And so as we step back and look at what was the principle that we were really standing on, the principle was we're right.
And at the end of the day, it came with a heavy price to litigate that and find out that, in fact, the law said that somebody else was in the right legally.
Yeah, we had a jury tell us that we were not as right as we thought we were.
And so, Dave, I know in your article that you recount a very interesting and really almost a kind of a touching story about a situation where you were working with some clients on an important matter, and it looked like things were headed to stalemate, and you turned the situation around with a box of chocolates.
We were negotiating a business deal. Actually, my clients were looking at buying a business that was in trouble financially. And it was about 7 o'clock at night, and it just seemed like we were making no headway. We were banging heads, and without thinking, I just got up and walked out of the room. And when I got out of the room, I thought, well, what do I do now? I happened to see these little Hershey chocolate bars on the receptionist's desk, so I grabbed a handful of them. I went back in. I just threw them on the table. I said, I think we need to get a different taste in our mouth. And about 15 minutes later, we had a deal. It was, again, another indication to me of we were really getting bogged down on some ego things and needing to be right. And if we can step back, as we did there, and just look at what we were really trying to accomplish, it was much more successful.
So as I'm listening to you here on the show today and knowing you as a human being and a partner for so many years, I'm gathering that one of the huge qualities you bring is the ability to listen to people and to really understand what emotional and other needs are driving their decision-making, their actions, and then working with them to focus those goals in appropriate ways that can be accomplished legally and lawfully.
Well, one example that comes to mind about how that has played out is I represent a family business up in outstate Minnesota. And I got a call a few years ago from the father who was absolutely distraught. He said that his two sons who were working in the business with him weren't getting along, and they had nothing to do with each other, and that he was concerned about the continuing viability of the business. So I spent a weekend with that family, and I simply just went from house to house to house listening. I almost said nothing for the whole weekend. I just listened. And by the end of the weekend, through asking a series of questions and kind of guiding their thinking through those questions, the three started meeting and ended up having a number of very successful years in the business before they ended up selling it.
Outstanding. And so still, I imagine there are times when you have to give clients some pretty amazing news, bad news, maybe harsh news for them to hear.
Well, I feel it's my obligation to bring my best counsel to the table for clients. And it does involve, at times, telling clients things that they just as well not hear. Just this past week, a client was talking about going into a new business with a new partner. And after listening to the client for about an hour, it became very clear to me that the client should not be in partnership with this individual, and I counseled him not to do the business.
And I imagine the client was a little bit disappointed at first to hear that, but nonetheless, you stuck to your reckoning, your lights.
I need to, I think any good business lawyer needs to tell the client what is the best counsel regardless of the outcome.
And in that regard, I wanted to ask maybe a bit of a provocative question here today, Dave, and that is, let's say you're negotiating an agreement with somebody and your client is maybe selling something or buying something. It doesn't matter, but you see that the other side has, even though they have a lawyer, that they've made a mistake in the preparation of a document, that it doesn't express what you understood the party's agreement to really have been. What do you do in that situation, especially if that mistake favors your client and prejudices the other side?
Well, Tom, you are right. That is a provocative question. There's a couple different ways to approach that situation. Obviously, we have to talk about the legal ramifications, and it may very well be that from a legal standpoint, there is no obligation to proofread someone else's document and no prohibition upon taking advantage of that situation. So that's one approach. Another approach is to think about, well, what's this really going to mean? And the bottom line is when two people enter into an agreement, they have in their own minds what that agreement is. Sometimes it's consistent with the legal paperwork and sometimes it's not. And in a situation like that, it's likely to lead to some type of problem. Now, I happen to be a Christian, and so my Christian faith would also tell me that I need to approach this perhaps a little differently. Now, not everybody shares that kind of view. Not all of my clients share that view. But to the extent they share my faith, I would counsel them that bottom line is you need to do what the right thing is.
And if the right thing in this situation is to point out the mistake to the other side, you would tell your client that they ought to do that and point out that on two levels it's the right thing to do, legally and ethically, morally, because at the end of the day it can be nothing but a handful of trouble if they don't.
That's likely what would happen.
Okay, very good. Well, I know it's impossible to peg everything down to exactly how it would work out from these hypotheticals. Let me ask you, Dave, if we can, just we have about 3 minutes before the break, to tell us perhaps what you do on a daily basis. Maybe tell us some of the things you've done recently that are interesting.
Well, just in this past week, I've worked on a variety of different projects. Somewhat unique project is I've counseled a client who purchased a very rare map, the Ricci map.
And the Ricci map?
The Ricci map. It was put together in 1602 by a Jesuit missionary over in China. It's well known in Scotland. Circles that by scholars who study these kinds of things. The map currently is on display at the Library of Congress. It'll be making its way to the Minneapolis Institute of Arts and finally to the James Forbell Library over at the University of Minnesota. So I've been involved in that project.
I imagine that entails some really quite interesting negotiations for something that's a rare work of such historical value.
Very unusual, and documents that are also quite unusual.
All right, so that's one end of the spectrum on your work. You helped a client land that here locally. What else have you been doing over the past week or so?
I've been heavily involved with a business, a local business, where the ownership of the second generation has been transferred down to the third generation. So we helped design that, took into account all the relevant factors, what the impact it would have on the family members, the taxes, and so forth.
And, Dave, that can be a challenge, first generation to second generation. I know the odds of that happening are pretty large. Second generation to third generation, that's pretty good.
It wasn't because of what I did. This is sexist because the client has done a very good job at preparing for the succession, and I have every confidence that they're going to be successful at this generation and the next.
All right, we've got a break coming up. Dave Sanger in studio. The article, What's Wrong with Being Right? Great reading, available online at moss-barnett.com. We have one more segment coming up. Dave Sanger, Tom Schroyer in studio. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Welcome back one more time today on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Next week's program starts 30 minutes earlier to accommodate a ball game. We'll be on the air at 11:30 next Saturday morning, 11:30 to 12:30. Tom Schroyer, Dave Sanger joining us in studio today. Day in the Life of a Business Law Attorney. Don't forget that article, What's Wrong with Being Right, available online right now at moss-barnett.com.
Thanks, Steve. Still not too late for folks to give a call in if they want to ask a question of Dave Singer or to text a question or a message in as well. We're going to wrap up by talking a little bit about the difference between being a business lawyer and a trial lawyer. As it turns out, Dave was a trial lawyer in his first year or two of legal practice. Dave, how'd that go?
Well, it was a great experience. My first year out of law school, I tried six cases myself, four to the court and two jury trials. I was fortunate or unfortunate, depending upon how you look at it, to be in a small firm in North Dakota where files were just handed to me and I had to go do it. It was a fantastic experience to really understand what clients go through in the heat of the battle.
Still, I know that from that experience, you decided to become a business lawyer, and you came down to the Twin Cities, met Howard Cox, and went to work here with our firm and its predecessors. What prompted you to make that switch?
Well, although the trial work was kind of heady stuff in a way and a confidence booster, I really didn't like the pressure and the stress that came with the trial work. I found myself thinking about what I'm going to say in the courtroom the next day when I was at home at night, and I wanted to do just clean business work.
All right. Well, and indeed, you ended up doing exactly that. But nonetheless, was your role as a trial lawyer for that period of time, has that been influential and helpful in your role as a counselor and an advocate for your clients in the business planning and business transactional context?
It has been. I learned firsthand, my own experience as well as in those experiences, the heavy emotional cost that goes with litigation. These clients that we work with, these privately owned businesses, are some of the most creative, dynamic, smart, innovative people. And when they get in the midst of the battle of a trial, it seems like their creative juices stop. And so there's a huge cost involved beyond the financial cost that we all think about when we hear about litigation. And so it's really influenced how I counsel clients to do whatever is reasonably necessary to stay out of the courtroom.
And so, indeed, your experience also allows you to, I'm sure, give better advice to clients, not only about when to, as it were, mediate and settle and resolve their disputes, but also if they have to proceed because they have an important legal right to vindicate, it gives you a better sense of what that entails.
Yes, it does. The reality is that most disputes are parties that are really acting in good faith. They just have a difference of opinion. So as part of what I do now today is to try to make sure that when we are doing deals, that there is a true meeting of the minds and people do understand what they're agreeing to, and that we document it properly so that, quite frankly, people remember what they agreed to.
Oh, absolutely. And, Dave, let me ask, as we're approaching the end of our hour here together, do you enjoy being a business lawyer, and would you recommend that a young person consider going into business law?
I absolutely love what I'm doing. I could not think of another job that I'd really rather have right now. I love talking to young people that are considering law. First of all, the law school experience is a fantastic experience, regardless of what that person is going to do when they get done. I absolutely love what I'm doing, and I would counsel anybody who has any interest in going to law school to pursue that.
Well, Steve, we can tell by listening to Dave here how what deep relationships he has with his clients and great respect, and how he gets involved in so much of their personal lives on a very, very deep and emotional and fulfilling level.
And there's no doubt this program could spawn numerous other programs. Dave, we hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you.
All right. Tom, we've got a great program lined up next week as well.
We do, Steve. I tell you, we have again returning Kevin Bush. Kevin is the chair of Moss & Barnett's commercial department, and he will be addressing the ins and outs of, again, the Uniform Commercial Code. This is part two of our series on the Uniform Commercial Code, which is really this massive set of laws that govern so much of what we do in business and society. And this Saturday, Steve, we're going to be talking about a particular part of the Uniform Commercial Code that deals with checks and checking accounts and promissory notes and other kinds of negotiable instruments that we really take for granted.
Sorry, I don't take checks anymore.
Well, exactly. But it's surprising how many people do.
That's right, and that's next week. 11:30, by the way. Moss and Barnett presents Minnesota Law here on News Radio 830 WCCO. By the way, materials from today's program available online at moss-barnett.com, including Dave's article, What's Wrong with Being Right? Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the day and enjoy the coming week.